Well, the Kimball Arts Center has a couple of events coming up this weekend. In the studio with details, I have Arts Center Director Robin Roosh along with Matthias Sonier. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So let's first up, we've got a fundraiser on Friday night.
Yes, tomorrow night we've got Time for Three, the wonderful band playing at Stein Erickson Lodge. It's a dinner and concert, and it's going to be a lot of fun. There's no auction. It's just the performance and a wonderful dinner.
All right, so tickets are how much?
They're $150. We still have some tickets available, so if you want to come out, once you hear this band, you will never forget their name. I saw them play for the Deer Valley Music Festival 10-year anniversary a couple of years ago, and they are so dynamic, and you will be on your feet and clapping and cheering.
So it's a threesome?
That's right, and they play contemporary music in a classical setting, so you'll hear everything from Mumford & Sons to Bach to Katy Perry to Mozart to Justin Timberlake.
Yeah. So what do they got? The string instruments? Is that what it is?
Yes, that's right. And they're, you know, young and they're in their 20s, but they're classically trained musicians who have a contemporary flair. And so it's very energetic and dynamic. I haven't seen anything like it before. I really love them. And Scott Anderson from Zions Bank is a huge fan as well and is sponsoring a tour of the Western States for them. And we were very blessed that they turned this into a way to support the Kimball Arts Center for our Kimball on the Move campaign.
All right. So, and then Stein's just offering up the venue then? And
that's right. Yeah. We're very blessed with the partnership with Stein's.
Okay. Again, people can get tickets by calling the Kimball or
they
online?
They can call the Kimball or go online to kimballartscenter.org/events. And we'll look forward to seeing you tomorrow night.
Great. All right. And then coming up on Sunday, September 3rd, the Kimball will be hosting a public arts installation. This is titled Rainworks. And what, Matthias, it's going to be the final event at the Kimball?
Yeah, so this is us wrapping up at our location here on Heber Ave and Main Street. We are installing several works, and on Sunday, September 13th at 1 p.m., we'll have the opening reception for our Rainworks at our current location on our back patio.
So I saw the video, so it's kind of easy for me to understand, but maybe you can explain it on the radio. It's pretty unique, and it's down in Seattle where there's lots of rain. So
yeah, exactly. So we invite a team of artists from Seattle, and what they do is they install these water-activated pieces along sidewalks, along walkways, on patios, and when they're dry, you actually can't see anything. But once they're wet, an image, and always with positive messaging, appears. And so we're focused on how water is used in Park City with this exhibit to kind of think about how integral water is to our community.
All right. So have they done the work yet?
They will be arriving in town tomorrow, and they will be installing this weekend. And we're really excited for our opening on Sunday.
All right. And you're going to be doing it at the patio there,
yeah,
or
the
along
back,
the sidewalks? Or
It'll start along the back patio. And later, as the week continues, there'll be more pieces along the sidewalk there. And also, we'll have another opening for other Rainworks at our new location along Kearns Boulevard.
Well, this could be good timing because it's supposed to rain, I think, like Tuesday, Wednesday. But you're gonna splash water on it if it's not raining?
It's not raining, we're going to invite everybody to come up on our patio. We're going to have water balloons. We're going to have the artists talk about their work. And then we're all going to reveal the new work by throwing water balloons at them.
So tell me, do you know the science behind it, how it works?
So it's a hydrophobic spray that they put down, and when the water is placed upon the pavement or the patio, it repels the water, and so parts of the cement, asphalt, stay dry while the rest of it is wet, and that contrast between the dry and wet is how the images appear.
All right, and the video was showing how they would use stencils then to kind of letter, like you say, the positive messaging.
Exactly, very similar to how graffiti artists use stencils, except this one you can't see.
Yeah, so this hydrophobic stuff, I mean, where can you get it? I need some for my clothes.
Well, they actually just started a Kickstarter, but they create their own formula from products over in Belgium. And it's completely eco-friendly, it's non-toxic, and it's also not permanent, so eventually it'll all come off.
Huh, interesting. Okay, so that's happening between 1 and 3?
Yep, it starts at 1. We invite everybody to enjoy Park Silly, have a good time before or after, and come up and see our Rainworks reveal.
Oh, given that Silly Market's there, probably want to encourage people to park maybe at the high school, take transit in. It's make it quick and easy.
Absolutely.
So let's talk briefly. We have a few more minutes. How is the new art center coming along?
Yes, it's under renovation right now. So if you're driving along Kearns, you can see some activity going on there. We are scheduled to move classes in there by October 13th, and then our grand opening will be October 23rd, 24th weekend, where we're opening with our new exhibit, Picturing the Iconic, works from Andy Warhol to Kara Walker, and we're going to have unbelievable works like Warhol's soup cans and Chuck Close and Alexander Calder's work. We're borrowing from a Portland collector named Jordan Schnitzer. So that's a great way to kick off the new space.
Yeah. When do you need to be out of the Heber Avenue location?
We have until the end of October, so we're transitioning sort of slowly as the renovation is getting wrapped up. And we're also taking over 2,500 square feet of a storage shed outside of our new location to create the new ceramic studio. So we actually have more space over there than we do here already, and an additional classroom for use. So okay. We're looking forward to introducing new types of classes that we've never had before.
All right. And then your offices and everything. I mean, that's where you're going to be at 1401.
That's right. And lots of parking, folks, front and back. We have over 50 parking spaces, which we're looking forward to.
Okay. Again, so those classes will be ready to start that people are registering for now.
In mid-October over in the new space, and as we start our transition. And I do want to, speaking of transit, as you mentioned before, we have an opportunity drawing going on right now where for $50 suggested donation, you could pick your choice of a Tiguan, Volkswagen, or a Beetle. So we're going to be doing that drawing at the end of October as well, but that's part of our Kimball on the Move campaign.
Okay. The new center, then, you plan to be there, what, at least a couple of years? Have you any progress on a permanent location?
We're doing our site search right now, and we hope to finalize a site by the end of this year. So we expect and anticipate we'll be in our temporary location 2 to 3 years.
All right. And the idea is that you will build new?
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. We're looking for land to buy, and then we will build a site-specific building on the wherever we end up.
Okay. Will there be, besides this event at the Kimball, kind of a way to say goodbye, or I mean, any plans to do that sometime in October?
Well, we're plans to say hello in our new space. I was reading to my daughter last night a book that said every ending is the chance for a new beginning. So we look forward to the grand celebration over on October 23rd, 24th weekend.
Okay.
But we hope to see you this weekend during Silly Market for the water balloon rainworks. Just add water.
Yeah, just add water. It'll be a great way to, if you'd like to say goodbye to that location. But we're still here, and we're still really excited to be a part of this community.
Okay, great. Robin, Matthias, thanks for coming in. We're going to take it out in the next minute here or so with a little ditty here from Time for Three. You're listening to Community Radio, KPCW 91.9 FM. It's 8:17 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, the Wheeler Fire still raging near Deer Creek Reservoir. On the phone with us with an update on that, I have the fire PIO, Kim Osborne. Good morning, Kim.
Hello, Leslie.
So where are we with this now? Last you and I talked, you were over 700 acres of you know, land burned.
Yeah, we have a little bit of update from that. Sometimes it's hard to get real accurate about the acreage, and we're actually only at 640. As the smoke was able to clear, we were able to get our helicopter in down a little lower to get all those little canyons and around. So it probably won't change from 640, but that's the final number that we're calling it. We're at 25%. Our crews have done some great progress. The weather's been cooperating. We're kind of shifting on getting all these hose lays in, securing line. Not needing to build any new line per se, but just to continue what we're doing and securing things. And we're going to have kind of a water show going today with our hose lays and working with the helicopters to provide firefighters with bucket drops with any hot spots.
It's got to be pretty convenient to have a reservoir right there, huh?
Yeah, it is. And there's some water up near the fire as well. And so we're able to put pumps in and to hook into our hose lays for the firefighters to use water.
Yeah, now do you have to have special permission to use water out of the Deer Creek Reservoir?
Yeah, anytime that we, you know, there's processes and procedures we go through to know where we can get water. We can't just assume that because there's a water source that we are able to use that. But yes, there is process that we go through.
All right. So at 25% containment, that's good news, making some progress there. Any indication of when you might be at 100% containment?
Well, I do know we're hoping, the plan is hopefully this weekend to get things all wrapped up. So that's our goal.
And even when you have that 100% containment, I think crews still stay on, right, just to watch for hotspots?
That's correct, because we may have everything aligned and maybe mopped in 150 feet in. There could be interior little smokes here and there, and especially in the area where there's, you know, people nearby or residents. Yes, we definitely will be patrolling until we do not see any more of those little smokes that pop up in the late afternoons when it gets hot out. So even though we may get the fire 100% contained and most of the big fire or most of the resources will leave, we will leave behind some local resources to patrol that for, you know, it could be anywhere for up to a week after, just depending on the needs of the fire.
Yeah, you missed the weather report. They were forecasting some windy conditions on Sunday, so that would probably be a great day to get it killed down here. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep, and I think we're pretty comfortable with where things are at right now, so things are looking really good.
All right, in terms of the crews that you've got fighting the fire, you're still up over 200?
Yep, we're up over 200. We have about 9 crews right now. We'll be working with 2 helicopters today. We'll have available some heavy air tankers or the smaller single-engine air tankers available to us if we were to need them. We don't foresee that, but we've got some engine crews and dozers and water tenders that will be all helping with the mop-up effort.
All right. So what's burning? Is this all private property?
There's some private and some Forest Service and some state and private and Forest Service.
Okay. And with regard to the drone that was reported on Wednesday, which kind of basically shut down the firefighting operations, any leads there? You had said that you were hoping that somebody might have reported who was flying that drone.
Yes. No, we have not had any reports of that. You know, that can be a difficult thing unless someone comes forward or saw something. You know, someone can be, you know, I'm not sure how the distance is, how far someone can be where they can fly that. So, you know, they could have been close in proximity or further away. We haven't had any leads on who had flown that drone.
But haven't seen any since.
No, we haven't.
All right.
It's a good thing.
It was also reported that state legislator, Utah representative to the House of Representatives, Craig Powell, has filed legislation that would prohibit and punish any drones that are flown in wildfire areas. So that's coming up, I guess, in January.
Oh, that'll be a good thing.
And in this case, and we had talked a couple days ago about a cause of fire. Early reports said that crews found a burnt ATV, and we're thinking that might be it. At this point, do we know what caused it?
I don't know exactly all what's going on with the investigation. That has been the report that has been mentioned, that could be, you know, the start of the fire. However, I don't have any details with what's going on with the investigation.
Okay. Anything else that you think people ought to know?
No, it's still fire season. I know fall's on the way, but we still need to be careful. And as we've seen, we've had a lot of fires popping up around Utah, so people just need to be extremely careful. You know, parking hot cars or anything over dry grass, our relative humidities are really low right now, and even though our temperatures aren't in the 90s, there's that potential, and you get wind, things can happen very quickly.
All right. Kim Osborne is the Northern Utah Interagency Team Public Information Officer. Kim, thanks for your update.
You're welcome.
KPCW News Time now, 8:32. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the local news hour here on KPCW. Joining me now in the studio, Park City Planning Commissioner Adam Strong. Good morning.
Morning.
So most everything at last night's meeting was continued, just not ready to go with it, or?
Well, just a short meeting. You know, a lot of staff and 2 of the planning commissioners were out on city tour, so I think some applications got continued because of that. You know, sometimes continuations are requested by the applicant, so.
All right. Well, a couple of those are continued. Was the 900 Round Valley Way. This is the new facility, Peace House facility?
Yeah, it's kind of a two-pronged application. One side of it is the Peace House, which wants to move out there And we heard a pre-MPD application from them at the last meeting. And then the other side of it is they want to divide a lot and get some density put onto that new lot. And we heard from them about that last meeting as well. This last night, just the most recent meeting, we just continued it. The applicant, who was represented by Morgan Bush from IHC, had a couple of things to change in the minutes, which were sort of Scrivener's errors, and some of them we concluded didn't need changing at all.
All right. So with regard to the pre-application plans that you've seen, they have enough density to build what they want to build, these houses?
Yeah, they have entered a lease with IHC to build I think it's 40,000 square foot facility out there. From what the applicant on whose behalf Doug Clyde spoke told us, it's quite a facility. It's very modern. It will provide the people there with really a lot of services that they desperately need. And provides a function for this community, which I think doesn't go unnoticed, but maybe because of the secretive nature of the Peace House, maybe does go unnoticed a little bit, but is still incredibly important. So we welcomed that pre-MPD. They still have an MPD to go through and a CUP, so we'll see them again. But so far, thumbs up.
So it's IHC that's looking for additional density on that subdivided portion?
Yes, yep.
To do what? More office facilities?
I think so, yeah. More, office facilities. I don't think it's an expansion of the hospital at all. I think it's just, you know, doctor's offices and outpatient care.
All right. Also continued last night were the Hotel Park City application looking for to build more rooms, more meeting space, and more parking.
Yeah, it's pretty vague what that application looks like at this point. They came to us last meeting with kind of a rough draft of what they were putting forth. And I think the key issue there is going to be the parking. I've seen you out there skate skiing before, and I go there in the winter. And sometimes it can be pretty difficult to find parking. And so one of the neighbors, I think, rightly raised the issue of whether the parking they're proposing is going to be sufficient. They're planning on putting in a bunch of new rooms and as you said, some new facilities. So they've proposed 100, I can't remember the exact number, but it's like 100 or 109 or spots. And the issue is whether that's going to be enough. And if it's not, where else would you put it? So we'll see what they say about that, and I think it was continued to a date uncertain, so I don't know exactly when they're going to be coming back.
All right. Something that was discussed was the pending ordinance. This is to expand the protection of what are known as historically significant buildings. So what did you have some public comment on that?
Yeah, we did, and the public comment was unanimously in favor of continuing the progress that the staff, Anya and Hannah, have done an excellent job on so far with the pending ordinance. And the pending ordinance basically casts a wider net as to what may be historic and what we may want to protect. It's not yet clear exactly what the ordinance may do to protect the homes, but we want to get more homes in Old Town within our database of potentially protectable properties. There was some discussion last night about whether 569 Park Avenue was sort of a hot button, and a lot of people were pretty upset about that, and understandably so. The issue last night that we discussed was how do you protect these properties against people who will just simply post the bond and tear it down anyway, say, to hell with it, I'll just pay the bond because I'll make more money reselling a McMansion than I would, you know, in forfeiting the bond. And it's a difficult balance, as City Attorney Harrington pointed out. You know, you don't want to make the bond so high that it's prohibitive for people that actually have legitimate interests in you know, refurbishing and redoing a historic home. But you also want to make the bond enough that it disincentivizes anybody from violating it. So it's a policy call. In the end, I think it'll be the city council's policy call. The city council has been very active in this. We read their minutes as part of the packet last night, and they clearly have their heads around the issue. So we'll let staff continue down the road on that and see where we end up.
So is it adding another level of bureaucracy?
Well, I don't know yet. You know, it's pretty amorphous at this point what final form the ordinance will take. But at minimum, I think it's safe to say that we are going to have more eyes on the ground, so to speak, on historic properties, so that we don't have things like 569 happen, and so that, you know, applicants coming in and thinking about redoing historic homes understand exactly what they're in for and they don't get surprised.
So the staff has said that anything built before 1975, if any modifications are made to the building whatsoever, it would still have to go before a design review with the HPB. So historic home is now 75?
Well, no, I think, and I think that's a common misperception out there. You know, it's incorrect if you think that if your home is, you know, 1975 or earlier, that you can't touch it anymore. That's not what the ordinance is proposing to do. The ordinance is simply proposing to look at them and say, you know, okay, this home was built 1975 or before. And by the way, we're not sure that 1975 is going to be the final date. We just don't know yet. Maybe 85, maybe 65, maybe a completely different number. But in any event, the ordinance just tells the city, okay, this property may or may not have some historically significant value to it. Let's take a look. If it does, we'll tackle that. If it does not, then the owner is in the exact same position they are today.
And how does the A-frames, the pregnant A-frames, all fit into this? Because there had been some talk about whether or not we should protect that, those kind of ski era buildings.
Yeah, I think, you know, the A-frames will be right in the middle of all this. And as Mayor Thomas has pointed out several times, the A-frames are, I'll put it in Jack's friendliest terms, a unique architectural era in Park City's history. But they, some of them, you know, people love them. Some of them have historic value to some. You know, it's on some level, it is a subjective determination. And A-frames hold a value to some people and not to others, and that's part of the policy discussion that the city council will get into. Do we want to look at A-frames as historically valuable or not?
All right. Anything else from last night's meeting?
No. Appreciate the public comment that came out on the historic ordinance, and that's it.
Yeah. So when do you think that this is, I mean, in terms of processing this, I mean, where are we at?
Tough to say. We're still at the pretty early stages. I wouldn't expect anything soon on it, but Anya and Hannah from the planning staff are working away, so it won't be lost, but it won't be immediate.
All right. Real quick, the vertical zoning ordinance, this is something that the Planning Commission will see here in the next little bit. Where do things stand with this? And again, this is the ordinance that what requires a business be built in a Main Street level floor?
Yeah, no, prohibits private clubs like a Talisker Club or a Promontory Club on the first floor. Businesses open to the public should be, according to the ordinance, on the ground floor. So, you know, people and tourists can walk in and out of all the establishments. And the question with the vertical zoning ordinance, which is already in place on Upper Main Street, is whether it should be extended into parts of Lower Main Street. And the staff is working on the structure of that ordinance, and we'll have, I think, a pretty good discussion on whether it should or shouldn't be but we'll see. You know, Lower Main Street is different. It's a different animal than Upper Main Street. And as much as I think some people battle that idea, it's true.
Well, and the reason it's different, I mean, we should point out, is because they were built as one or as very large buildings, so they needed that grade, whereas on Main Street we have very individual properties so that they could be built at grade. So some of those Lower Main Street properties are kind of a staircase.
You're
up.
Right. Yeah, no, that's exactly right. It's built differently. It looks different. It feels different. And so the question is whether the ordinance that applies to Upper Main Street should apply the same to Lower Main Street, and we'll have to figure that out.
All right. Any news with regard to Treasure? That's still, I think, a pending application before the Planning Commission.
Silence from the folks at Treasure. So we'll just wait and see, as we have for quite a while now.
All right. And we've got an interim planning director. How's Bruce Erickson working out?
In my opinion, he's working out very, very well. It's very difficult for a planning director to get up to speed on things. Bruce, however, has the distinct advantage of having 16 years, I think, maybe more, as being a planning commissioner. So he comes in with his feet on the ground. He knows how to run a meeting. He knows how to say and do things that are appropriate. And I look forward to working with them.
Great. Adam, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
That's Park City Planning Commissioner Adam Strong. KPCW News Time now, 8:46. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, local nonprofit organizations were recognized last week through grants from the Park City Community Foundation. In the studio with me, I have Programs Manager from Park City Community Foundation, Ollie Wilder, along with Board Member Sid Reed. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning. Good morning.
So let's first let you introduce yourself. You're the new programs manager, yeah?
Yeah, I arrived at the foundation in late June. I'm delighted to be there. We moved here from Maine about a year ago. My background's been in nonprofits for a long time. Most recently, I worked for an organization called PopTech, which is a little bit like TED, doing thought leadership conferences and so on. So I was glad to arrive here and see the Park City Institute, for example, doing a lot of TEDx conferences. But I also had volunteered for about 8 years on a volunteer grants committee for the Maine Community Foundation. So when this position became available, I thought, wow, that looks great. And I'm delighted to be with the foundation. I'm having a great time already.
Oh, good. Okay, so again, the how much money did you, not me, hand out last week?
$110,000 this year.
Wow. So, and how many organizations benefited out of that?
About 27. So this year, it was 27. We deliberate on that committee how to, you know, give these grants out. And this year we decided to try to give a little more impact. It's very difficult. But, I mean, in the end, we want to give to everybody. It's just very difficult. But we gave three less nonprofits, and our average grant was a little bit higher than last year. So it was nice to be able to give those away.
Yeah. So where does the $110,000 come from?
Well, that is our community fund, and that comes from donors. And we sell a community pass, which affords you the ability to ski at canyons in Park City, and some spa treatments and tickets to different things, and golf courses, about five or six golf courses in town that you get passes to, maybe two or three rounds at each place. And so through that pass, for $8,000 it is, we are able to raise enough funds to give these grants. And many donors also give to the, and LivePC, GivePC, we also receive some money to our community fund. And that's really basis of what we do, is to help nonprofits.
So 27 out of, boy, how many applicants did you have?
This year in the first round, there were about 56 applicants. And then of those, 47 were carried into a second round with longer proposals. And so we made 27 grants of those 47 that applied. 27 was down a little from 30 grants the year before. The average grant size went up from about $3,500 to $4,000. And as Sid mentioned, we gave away $110,000 this year compared to $105,000 last year. So, you know, trying to get a little bit more oomph every year. And this year felt good to be able to do that.
Well, KPCW was one of the beneficiaries, so thank you.
Yeah.
But how do you decide? I mean,
well, one of our criteria is the reach of their program. How many people would it reach in the community? And how And so in the case of KPCW, of course, that helps everybody. I mean, your grant was for the PSAs and for the interviews like this one you're doing with nonprofits. And so everybody benefits from that. And that was is just what we're looking for, you know. Something like that will help everybody. And also we gave to some others that stand out, like Jewish Family Service. Very often mental health is not recognized, or for people too, they're less likely to be aware that they're suffering from a mental condition, or and so they can go to the Christian Center or to People's Health Clinic, and there they can access the Jewish Family Services that do specifically mental health. And we felt that was really important for the health of our community, and it reaches quite a few people in that area.
One thing that's fun is that the Park City Community Foundation has a practice of not requiring final reports on these grants. Rather, we do site visits with the nonprofits about 6 to 8 months after the grant's been given. So yeah. Sid, for example, actually went and visited Jewish Family Service last winter, and so she came into the grants committee with a great sense of what they do.
Yeah. So we always do site visits to go and check and see, how did the money work? Did it work? Didn't it work? And, you know, in some cases, they write the grant, they have this great idea, and then when it gets to practice, it doesn't work, but they use the money for other specific things, and we're interested in that, you know, to see what they did. And also, visiting them, you can kind of see hands-on what they're doing. And so that's really beneficial for this committee.
So are there any strings attached to the grants? I mean, other than performing the work that they say that they're going to do, I mean, do they have to have matching grants or anything like that?
Generally, there aren't any strings attached. They apply to us for what they think we can be most helpful with. And for almost all of them, they just receive a check just like that. There were one or two where the committee said, well, if you could just show us that you've taken this one step before we send you the check, that'd be really helpful to us. But that's really rare. Generally, it's pretty much no strings attached.
Yeah.
I'd love to, if it might be interesting to highlight a couple of the other grants. For example, we were delighted to get a proposal from North Summit Elementary School. We love it when the reach of the programs hits the various sides of Summit County. And they had a really innovative idea. They're doing what's called a STEAM program, which is STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, with art added to it. So you add in that design element, the creativity that makes STEM actually into something innovative and different and actually create new inventions. So they have some project-based learning with the kids who are then learning about those hard subjects like science and technology and so forth in the context of making something new, making something different. So we loved that one, and we fully funded that grant to them at the amount that they requested, which we're not always able to do, but it's really satisfying when we can. Maybe a couple of others. People's Health Clinic is so compelling. We know that there's a great need in the community, and People's Health Clinic really fills that need. And you see them also hosting so many other services with other partners. For example, we just learned the other day that the Hope Alliance, which isn't in the grant pool this year, but the Hope Alliance actually has started some local programs. Most of their programs are international. They've just done, they're in the process of doing a vision clinic at the People's Health Clinic. So it's just another example of how important those services are. And Recycle Utah, there we helped fund their Center for Hard to Recycle Materials. Where are you going to put that styrofoam? Where are you going to put the bottles that you can't really do much else with? Mm-hmm. They will take them. They can figure out what to do with them. And that's a huge service to the community. And the Kimball Art Center, maybe just one more to mention right now. We know they're moving. That seems like they're almost at their new place, but we actually helped fund their in-school programs. They send art educators out there, and it's a way that we can help them to provide some continuity while they're in a state of some change. So we felt really good about that as well.
Right. So are the community passes that help fund these grants on sale again for the coming season? Or
they're they're on sale through the foundation, and they're throughout the year you can buy these, and they're really wonderful for us.
They do actually tend to sell out. I think we may have something like one available coming up. So if anyone's interested, they should contact the Park City Community Foundation.
All right. Yeah. And then gearing up for Live PC, Give PC, the date this year?
Always in charge of that one. We're all. Now, and Live PC, Give PC this year And I can just speak to this because very often that time of year I am getting out of town, you know, right when Live PC, Give PC is, because it's lousy weather and it's not time for skiing yet and a little place in Florida and I leave. But you can give your donations now and then it will be given and it will apply that day. So that's what I'm going to do, is to get on get online, choose my favorite organizations and give a little bit, you know, and then it will be given on the day of the 6th. November 6th is the big Live BC, Give BC Day. It's a fabulous community day where everybody gives to their faves.
Right, so check out livepcgivepc.org. Again, it's Friday, November 6th is the day of giving this year. And actually, this is a great way to sort of put in context the kind of support that the foundation tries to provide to nonprofits. Yes, we give grants, so we try to get them some money. LivePC, GivePC acts as a platform for them to raise their own money for each nonprofit. And then also we do education programs, and we're actually just about to announce, hopefully today, a webinar series on fundraising, 4 webinars with some fundraising specialists, Kathy LeMay and Alyssa Wright. Those will go October, November, January, and March. And so, again, we're trying to help the nonprofits to get the job done that they need to do.
All right. Big goal, I think, for this year, though.
Yes, for Live PC, Give PC, we're last year we raised a little over $1 million, which was huge. This year the goal is $1,234,567. So that's a
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Okay, well, good luck with that. We'll talk to you about that later, I'm sure.
Yes. Yeah.
All right. Hey, Sid and Ollie, thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Leslie. Morning News and the Local News Hour with Leslie Thatcher is provided by Park City Medical Center, Jan's Mountain Outfitters, Deer Valley Resort, and Promontory and the Promontory Foundation.